Hi, my name is Rick Goldsworthy. As Heather said, I'm Director of Research and Development at Academic Edge. What we do is look at, think about people's behaviors and changing people's behaviors. I have a wide range. I'm fairly content agnostic. I try to figure out why people do the crazy things that they do, and I try to change that. I was a teacher and technology coordinator for 7 years before going in to get my PhD now 8 years ago, and to look at education, educational processes. What I'm going to talk about today is a project we're doing related to something called ESPERT, and I'd like to do a little bit of audience analysis to start off. How many of you have heard of ESPERT? Perfect. So from that, I'm taking it the rest of you have never heard of ESPERT, so I'm going to step back and talk about that a little bit too. ESPERT is a practice that started off, I was talking to one of my fellow presenters this morning, at Boston College, among other places, Boston University, among other places. It's screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment. And what we're trying to do with that, it's a SAMHSA-backed effort that is receiving a lot of play and has been for the last 10 years in ERs, but also in primary care facilities and in some of the projects we're working on in community health centers and public health clinics. The idea is that every single patient that you see is screened once per year for alcohol or drug use. In most of the settings that we're doing. These things are going on. There are some large-scale state grants, cooperative agreements, that fund almost every state has received one of these now in the $10 million range to roll out ESPERT in either a community health center type settings or in other locales. There's also a similar number of grants that are related to medical residency training doctors to ask about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Well, not sex. That's actually one of my problems with it. I was talking to one of the young ladies as we started, Catherine, is that we don't ask about everything. But anyway, screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment, it's supposed to take about five minutes if somebody is not at risk. The idea is that you catch more people who are at risk for drugs or alcohol use than you would otherwise. The key issues are adoption. Can you get it into play in the different practices? Because, of course, you know, if you want to ask one more question, it's going to take that much more time in an already busy clinic environment. So one of the really tricky things about implementation is having enough time or understanding how you're going to implement it at the practice level, not just how you do it. Because most docs already know how to ask a few questions, and most of them, but not all, are able to do what's called the brief intervention component, which is a bit of, for use some jargon, but a bit of motivational interviewing. It's, now, do you realize that I see here on the thing that you indicated you drink three or four times a week, and when you do, you have six or seven, maybe a little more than that, drinks. You realize that can have some health consequences for you. Okay, you do. Have you thought about maybe cutting back on your drinking? And then a conversation ensues. That's the model of motivational interviewing. So what we're doing on the project I'm going to share with you today is we're trying to support some of that. I'm involved in, I'm the director of dissemination and implementation for one of these statewide grants, one of the cooperative agreements to Indiana. And I'm also involved as the director of education for one of these medical residency programs. And I've had a few grants and contracts from CDC and from the from NIDA for these as well. So, alcohol and substance misuse affect an estimated 25% of primary care patients. Public health clinic providers are uniquely positioned to address this problem, but providers in CHCs and other practice environments don't ask. We simply aren't asking about drugs and alcohol use. You'd think we would, and it surprised me years ago when I was involved in some sex studies as well. We don't ask about sex, and we don't ask about alcohol and drugs when we're in there. ESPERT is the solution. It's screening, brief intervention, referral to treatment. As I said, it looks like my one little graph got mangled when I uploaded it. And it's endorsed by a whole lot of different people. But despite this, there aren't many case studies illustrating ESPERT patient-provider interactions. There are quite a few I'm going to walk away for a second. There are quite a few of these things where I show you how to communicate. How do you do a screening? How do you ask a couple questions? How do you interact with a patient once you have those results? You know, that's, again, pretty easy. That's easy to both demonstrate. It's also easy to do, though you do have to do a little bit of training around it. The hard part, however, is deciding how to integrate this sucker system-wide in a practice. Who's going to do the screening part? Who's going to take a form and carry it over? Why should I do this as part of my practice? What's the benefit of doing that? How's it going to affect my patient flow? That stuff, nobody's really captured any case studies of. So as part of one of our other projects, so it's not simply, how do I talk to a patient? Rather, we're looking at how does it fit into patient flow? And so that was the goal of our educational development for this project. Create real-world case studies that not only include those models of patient-provider interaction or how I talk to you as a patient and how I gather data and how I get you to maybe change your behavior and at least refer you over to further treatment, but how does that fit into the entire system? So it's a model of organization-wide implementation. We've only done one so far. From front desk personnel to attending physicians. Along with not just like a dog and pony of how you might do it, we went to a real place, looked at how they were doing it, and what the challenges and lessons were as they went along the way. We did this in part to be able to feed into the two grants, the two cooperative agreements that we're working on. So we identified an early adoption site in Pennsylvania called North Shore. We conducted site visits and interviews, so I'll whip through these methods. Designed patient cases, designed some simulated patients, and prepped them for rollout. We didn't use real patients because of competency issues and we have no control. So we took the real docs, the real providers in the environment, created simulated patients just like we do in medical education, put the simulated patients in those environments, and videotaped everything. Then asked them what they thought afterwards. Sent the rough cuts to all the participants to review, finalize them. So we ended up with about an hour and a quarter of edited video, including six patient cases. So we do have all these models of people doing it. All of those are at various levels of risk. But we also had this one clinic-wide video case showing the process from intake all the way to the exit of the patient. It included interviews with every team member, as you can see, everybody from a chief resident all the way on down to the receptionist, how it was implemented there and how it affected their practice. And these are the real folks. We did demonstrate the processes themselves. What is the screening? What is the intervention? What's the referral? And we did it with these simulated patients down here. These folks were made up cases that we varied on demographics and also on level of risk, so that when we threw somebody through the system, they would either land at, they screened out. With screening and brief intervention, the screening part can often be just two questions. Are you using alcohol? Are you using drugs? And then you're done. So we wanted to make sure that we had some that were there, and how does that affect flow through a patient environment? And we used some that were very, very high at risk, and some that are in the middle, because in the middle is where we want to conduct the brief intervention. That's where the doc or, in certain environments, a behavioral health specialist can step in and do additional intervention with the folks before they're passed on or out of the system. Formative evaluation, we did do formative evaluation on most of it. Folks, knowledge changed for most of the people who used it. I'm just going to whip through it. If anybody wants this stuff, I have it online. You get my card. Some of the main suggestions were... they wanted more diverse cases. I only have one case, implementation case, and it is a very specific environment. Ideally, what I would like to have is three. You have to have at least three cases because you want to be able to do what's called set generalization or generalization across the set of cases, and you also want people to be able to recognize things in themselves. So in other projects where I've done things like this, including doing expedited partner therapy, I don't know if any of you have done that either, but it's another one of these emerging practices. That's one where you go into a doctor and the doctor says, hey, you have a bacteriological STD. And you go, oh, that's not good. And he says, oh, but it is. You can be treated. And by the way, your partner probably has it too. Well, then they can offer additional medication for you to take home to your partner. This is going on in a lot of states around the country. It is just now being adopted. New York is just implementing it for chlamydia. We have three cases for that. My point is, when you have three, you can look across the set of cases and you can say, oh, I see myself here, I can see that, I'm not so much here. When you have one case, like we have here, for the prototype, what you get is a reaction that's not me. So if anybody does any work in alcohol and drug use, got it, 5 minutes. If anybody does anything in alcohol and drug use, you know that the big thing about Alcoholics Anonymous or some of the others is recognizing yourself in the stories that are being told by the people who are in the rooms. And so if you do recognize yourself in the stories, then you're more likely to affiliate. If you recognize yourself in the cases that we develop, then you're likely to say, hey, I could see how that could work. With one case, we can't always do that. So we need to generalize across the set. We also need a heightened emphasis on motivational interviewing as a cross-cutting skill. There's some, if you know what motivational interviewing is, or think you do, because it's really kind of nebulous sometimes when we talk about it. It's the underpinning skill that allows you that enables us to be patient-centered, that enables us to talk to a patient. The way that would allow them to buy into what we're saying as a provider. It's a, you know, I feel your pain. We don't usually say that, but that's the idea. It's understanding, being open, being exploratory with and being non-directive with a patient. Part of the issue in the cases that we currently have is that doesn't come to the forefront, although it's being used throughout, so we just have to make it a little more salient. So as I said, I jumped ahead, but participant inability to generalize from a single clinic, they don't see the forest for the trees. Oh, well, we don't have that particular electronic medical record system, so this doesn't apply. Well, okay, try generalizing. Perceived lack of relevance of some of the segments. We had this laundry list of personnel, the seven, eight people who were involved. If your clinic isn't exactly that way, sometimes they people reacted and said, well, I don't see how the case is relevant. Docs in particular were bad about the other staff members all loved the other segments, the parts that were about them. Docs were like, well, that's not relevant. I don't need that in my environment. Because they didn't see, you know, that those people are all going to be involved in a flow if you see it. Then when we talked to them about it and said, well, why this is why it's here, they're like, oh, yeah. I get it, but they don't see it right off, so that's an educational thing in terms of adoption generally. Finally, kind of like me, shorter. They all wanted everything to be shorter in terms of the case studies, but say more. It's like those journal manuscript reviews you love to have. Say more with less words. So that are really tough. Anyway, adoption and implementation remains a challenge at the individual provider and organizational levels. The cases like we've developed are freely available. You guys can have these things. We can get it to you. I don't think I have any DVD copies right now, but we have most of them up on YouTube. I can get you versions if you want to see them, want to use them. You're welcome to do so. To a certain extent with these cases, we can even do a little bit of tailoring because we're in the middle of doing stuff for these other Indiana projects, and so if you happen to be involved in something and you need something that's a little different from what you see, I could probably just do it because we have, some of the guys I work with have the videos up for editing for other things, so it's not a big deal. We really need to look at if we're going to do this kind of thing, as I said, we really need to have some more cases out there, some more support materials that are focused towards being templates. You know, like if somebody out here says, oh, Esper, yeah, now I understand I got to do this, then having patient materials that are sort of kit-based and says, I can take this and make this work in my facility would be really helpful. And again, as I mentioned, we're also doing these training and technical assistant things for the two SAMHSA efforts. But, you know, if you want to use the cases, we're happy to share. And I am kicked off, and that was my last slide. That's amazing for me. Thank you. If you have any questions, let me know afterwards. I appreciate your time this morning.